Hello, I'm Samara Rosenfeld, Associate Editor of HCP Live. Welcome to Doc Talk. September is Pain Awareness Month, a time when various organizations work to raise public awareness of the issues of pain and pain management. With that, it is important to recognize the different types of pain patients experience from a variety of disease states. While there are traditional methods of treating pain, such as prescribing opioids, an epidemic has led to addiction, overdose, and death. According to the CDC, an average of 41 people died each day from overdoses involving prescription opioids in 2018, totaling nearly 15,000. Still, there was a 13.5% decrease in prescription opioid-involved death rates from 2017 to 2018. Although typically opioids are prescribed to treat pain, guidances have been instilled to limit the number of pills prescribed to patients. And alternative therapies and technologies exist to completely remove opioids from the treatment plan of patients. I had the opportunity to speak to Dr. Alan Kay, a pain interventionist and professor at LSU Health School of Medicine, to discuss the importance of recognizing Pain Awareness Month, which was first declared a medical holiday in 2001, alternate treatments for pain, drugs in the pipeline, caring for a patient with pain, and much more. We hope you enjoy the talk. Thank you so much, Dr. Kay, for joining me today. Why don't we start by talking about the importance of recognizing Pain Awareness Month?
Well, I think that it's great to have Pain Awareness Month for a lot of reasons. One is that there are so many technological developments and new drugs that come out month to month and certainly year to year. So to have a Pain Awareness Month, we can speak to it within our groups of different healthcare providers, but to the public at large.
And what are some of those technological developments?
Well, I think that when you talk about pain, you're talking about acute pain and you're talking about chronic pain. And with regard to acute pain, over the past 5 years or so, we've seen a lot of progress and improvement. A lot of this has links to understanding that acute pain that's poorly managed can end up in chronic pain states. And certainly the way that many providers treated acute pain with lots and lots of opiates over long periods of time resulted in or consequented to patients having addiction and dependence issues with opiates. You know, if you take 100 patients who are given opiates, all 100 will have their normal endogenous opiate production suppressed. And by that, some of those substances, endorphins and enkephalins and dynorphins, are our natural opiate. And so by taking opiate pills or in other preparations, we really suppress endogenous production. So it's not surprising that we would end up with a dependence whereby if we don't take the exogenous opiate, we would have central nervous system hyperreactivity, increases in heart rate, blood pressure, anxiety, GI problems, and what we commonly call a collection of signs and symptoms of withdrawal. And so with that as a backdrop, with our government coming in and pressuring us federally, our president called the opiate epidemic a national epidemic. Our states, now our national boards, they're looking at every prescription that we write. And one of the things that was done early on a few years ago was limit the amount of opiates prescribed in each state to either 5 days or 7 days. And by doing so, it put pressure on our surgeons, our administrations, our anesthesiologists to come up with effective ways to manage pain acutely. And two of those things that have come to be now commonplace and typical, not everywhere, but they should, are the concepts of enhanced recovery after surgery, where basically strategies, evidence-based, are practiced to reduce opiate consumption post-op and to allow patients to get home quicker. And some of those strategies include adjuvant medications that have been studied and shown to reduce these two endpoints, opiate consumption, and get the patient home earlier. Acetaminophen is an example. Ketamine is an example. Alpha-2 agonists are examples. And probably the most impressive as an anesthesiologist for me has been the development of ultrasound-guided nerve blocks. So basically, we're able to put a needle in through ultrasound exactly a millimeter, a couple millimeters from the nerve that would be the source of pain generation acutely. And we have different local anesthetics that we use and other adjuvant medications that are being studied, such as steroids and alpha-2 agonists in the blocks themselves to prolong those blocks and have great post-operative pain relief. We even have a drug called Exparel, which is FDA approved now for brachial plexus blocks that gives you pain relief. It's a local anesthetic, a liposomal bupivacaine that gives you relief for 3 to 4 days, which is amazing. We never had a local anesthetic that lasted more than a few hours. With regard to chronic pain, we have a lot of very, very exciting technologies and medications. And I'll see if I can highlight them in this short podcast. First off, we have regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine is basically using your own blood and blood products, parts of them, to improve tissue healing and tissue regeneration. Two examples that we use in our practice now today include PRP and stem cells. Just yesterday, we used stem cells by doing a bone marrow on a patient and injecting those stem cells after they were centrifuged for a few minutes directly into the patient's hip. One of the things about regenerative medicine is that it's so new that the techniques are being developed and the clinical studies are coming out, especially in the last few years, showing efficacy with, in particular, musculoskeletal type injuries. So of the spine, of different muscle beds, even other things such as bursas and other things that are affected very commonly and are very debilitating for everyone. Certainly as we age, as we're active, we see these injuries and regenerative medicine has shown so far to be a great niche. It's our own natural substances that have components that allow for a quick and impressive recovery. One of the other very impressive things that has been developed are different surgical techniques. And for everyone out there, we have not only interventional pain physicians, but we have orthopedists and neurosurgeons and interventional radiologists and others who have made their careers only doing these interventional procedures. And in recent years, there have been a couple of very significant developments. One is the so-called mild procedure, which is a treatment for a hypertrophied ligamentum flavum that can cause compression of nerve roots and other pain states. It's a short procedure, an easy procedure. There's no bleeding. It's an outpatient procedure that's been shown to be effective and actually more beneficial than epidural steroids head-to-head for those with lumbar stenosis. Another whole area of development is endoscopic surgical procedures where there is a minimal incision and the equipment is such that you can basically free up compressed nerve roots. And that would be ideal, again, for people with complicated histories and complicated backs. Remember that 100 years ago, we only lived into our 20s. And so nowadays, of course, it's normal for people to live in their 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. So these technologies fit really well with the needs of our patients who are not only getting older, but have complex pathologic states. The third area that I would say that is quite fascinating includes spinal cord stimulators. Spinal cord stimulators basically are leads or wires that are placed along the epidural space. There's a trial first where they're tested for 5 to 7 days. There's great technology such that now it's paresthesia free. The patients tolerate it very well and they have effective pain relief for chronic pain states. Intrathecal pump placements, again, a test dose is given first to see if there is efficacy of a patient's pain. And then there's an implantation. We did one yesterday, again, where we put in a pump, typically with morphine, could be fentanyl or other things. And that pump is connected to a wire that is threaded into the intrathecal space, into the cerebrospinal fluid, to bathe the critical nerves of the spinal cord that are at a source of the pain generation and an attractive target for pain relief. So I think all of those acute and chronic pain, there have been great technological advancements there's more to come. There are a lot of different medications that are being studied. There's a local anesthetic that I'm aware of that's being tested that lasts for 3 weeks. So I was just bragging about a local anesthetic that lasts 3 to 4 days. Well, there's a lot more in the pipeline, hopefully to treat everyone's pain. And Pain Awareness Month is a great showcase for these new technologies and drugs.
Now, when it comes to more traditional therapies for pain, where do you see the most promise?
Well, I think that, I have a PhD in pharmacology. So I think that there are a lot of attractive medications that make a big improvement. We call them sometimes adjuvants. And I think that all healthcare providers who see pain patients. Again, pain is the number one complaint in an emergency room. It's the number one complaint in a clinic setting, and certainly in a pain clinic. Believe me, it's the complaint. So I think that different adjuvants such as gabapentinoid agents, they're slow release as extended release formulations have reduced side effects. And those are calcium channel blockers, so they don't have the same dynamics of an opiate, antidepressants, other anti-convulsant agents. There are some benefits, but side effects to all of these agents, including tramadol, and others that have dual activities. Buprenorphine has been a fantastic improvement in that it's very long acting. It has a half-life of 37 hours. First, it was only approved for substance abuse disorder. Now it's also approved for different pain states. And because of its long duration, patients do very well. It is a partial mu agonist, and so the overdose mediated respiratory and central nervous system depressive effects are really not seen with buprenorphine. And there are combination buprenorphine preparations such as Suboxone, which includes naloxone in the event of abuse, such as if someone tried to inject it, the naloxone would serve like an anti-abuse type effect for alcohol to block the potential of opiate overdose.
What would you say the standard of care should be for a patient who comes in presenting with pain?
I think that's a great question, Samara. I think that sometimes patients think that they should have 100% relief of these complex chronic pain states. And I think that's not realistic. So I think the standard of care is to explain to the patient realistic goals, such as 30% and 40% improvement. And if you get lucky and you get 80, 90, or 100% improvement, it's fantastic. As I said, people who do this for a living, especially those that are interventional pain doctors, can really have the latest technologies at their fingertips. I just left the OR. We did a SI joint binding technique for someone with chronic sacroiliitis. There are now other techniques that have come en vogue. I don't want to be a commercial for them, but the Vertiflex is another piece of equipment that we've been using in for spinal stenosis. And it's pretty simple to put in, and it goes over the spinous process. So I think that patients should know that there are lots of evolving technologies, and that they don't have to live in pain, but they have to do their homework. A great place to go is on the American Society of Interventional Pain Physician website, where there are lists of about 5,000 pain doctors across the United States that are linked to our society. I serve as their editor-in-chief of the Pain Physician Journal, and we have all of our publications are for free. So it's easy if you have a primary care doctor to partner with these ACIP great specialist doctors to look at these evolving technologies and medications. One of the limits of a lot of pain doctors across the country is they don't do interventional procedures, so they're only limited to giving prescriptions, which may give quite a bit of benefit, but really don't take out the pain generators in most instances. Not always, but in many instances.
What does the typical care team look like? Is it a big care team? Is it just one doc, someone working with other specialists?
Well, first of all, with regard to acute pain, all anesthesia providers understand the importance of acute pain relief. But we've evolved throughout the country collaborative meetings with different stakeholders such as surgeons and nurses and administrators to make sure that we have the technology to perform, say, ultrasound blocks, which would require at a minimum an ultrasound device that could cost well over $100,000. So the best way acutely is collaborative with all the stakeholders. And with regard to chronic pain, there are lots of different models. Some people work by themselves, others work in groups of a few interventional pain physicians with providers such as PAs, nurse practitioners, residents, and fellows, Certainly at academic centers, you'll see a lot of that. But I think also you have to make sure that your doctor is interested in the evolving technologies that are paving the way for novel treatments that really are game changers. And that's what it's all about, to take away people's pain. I can't think of a more exciting thing to do every day, every week, year round. So I tip my cap to everyone involved with Pain Awareness Month. And as far as all of the people who are afflicted with different pain states, please be a good consumer and look for people that are well qualified and interested to alleviate your pain. The answer is not just taking a large number of opiates, certainly not giving you a bunch of benzodiazepines, and certainly not giving you a bunch of muscle relaxants.
Are there certain disease states where pain is more difficult to care for?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of different disease states that are very difficult. I'm thinking of phantom limb pain. I'm thinking of fibromyalgia. There are lots and lots of pain states that are very difficult to really get a handle on and have great success. There are a lot of them, fortunately, where the benefits of different therapeutic interventions are fantastic. And that's why you have to be an optimist and go about this in a way that targets a best outcome for you and or if you're a provider, your patients. You shouldn't be satisfied with just writing prescriptions for opiates, muscle relaxants, benzodiazepines. That's really done nothing more than create an epidemic, of which there are 140,000 overdose deaths just in the last 2 years in the United States. So I think we have to look at these new technologies, and if it's PRP or stem cells, or if it's a spinal cord stimulator, if it's better acute pain management through ERAS protocols, including ultrasound-guided nerve blocks. I think that it's a very exciting time, and we're in the precipice of tremendous explosion in therapeutics. And if we look at where we are just a few years from now, I think that everyone is going to be amazed at these developments, both technologically and pharmacologically.
Is there anything else that you would like to share as it relates to pain during Pain Awareness Month?
Well, I think for patients, and I'm thinking of my mom, she believed that her pain was worse than everybody else's in the world. And so I think that everyone should realize that this is common as you get older, as you have injuries. But I think to have the right mindset to go about improving it is important, and that you should remain positive and be a good partner with those people who have these talents and gifts to do procedures or the wisdom to utilize different medications to allay your pain state. You should also realize that it could be tomorrow, next week, that a technique would come to be that would be a game changer for you. In my own life, 20 years ago, I put my father on my shoulders for a picture, which was not exactly the smartest thing to do in a swimming pool. And I had a herniation in my neck at two levels. And so every time I turned my neck to the left or right, I would have tingling down my arms. I never had pain. I never took a pain pill. I was fortunate But immediately I ran to a surgeon, and he said, no, we're not going to do surgery. You just have tingling. And within a year or so, there was development of a percutaneous discectomy technique whereby a device was placed in my disc, a button was pressed, and about a milliliter of disc was removed, and the tingling went away on the spot. It was done with local sedation, and I never had a paresthesia, never had a pain again. And like I said, it's many, many years later. So keep your chin up. Also, if you're older and you're getting from your 50s to your 60s to your 70s, you lose about 3 inches of disc height. And if you have a herniated disc and it's pressing on your nerve roots, remember that just that aging process as you go, in particular from your 60s to your 70s, you're going to lose about 3 inches. And so that may by itself alleviate a lot of the discomfort you're having from the disc pinching on the nerve root. You could give the credit to the pain doctor, but it may be just Father Time that provides this unique benefit for you. So you shouldn't look at it as forever. It may be that your therapy may be improved in a very short period of time. So do your homework, read, ask questions, partner up with an American Society of Interventional Pain Physician. These guys are wonderful. And like I said, have realistic goals, but be a little bit greedy, and hopefully you'll find that you're in a free pain state and have a good quality of life, and you live happily ever after, which everyone should be so lucky to do.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. K, for joining me today. I really appreciate your insights, and yeah, thanks again.
My pleasure. Everyone have a great day. Thanks for having me, Samara.
Thank you so much to Dr. K for joining us on this episode of Doc Talk. Remember to sign up for our daily newsletters and follow us on Twitter at MD Magazine and Facebook and LinkedIn by searching HCP Live. I'm Samara Rosenfeld. Thanks for listening to Doc Talk.